show this prehistoric bitch how we do things downtown.
Hello and welcome to Empire of Geek. I am your host, Steve. If this is your first time tuning in, we love to talk about anything cool and geeky. If you have tuned in before, though, you probably noticed that we've been away for several months. And the reason behind that is that I, with my missus, we had another baby. And if you are a parent, you'll know that children don't half take up a lot of your free time. And so I've been really busy with that. But on the plus side, as I've got two children now, if I should ever need an organ transplant sorted, you know, I've got the spare bits there waiting. So that is the benefit of having more than one child. One to continue your genetic line, and then the other one for spare parts. So that turned out pretty well. Now, as I said, we've got more time now, so which is why we are back. It's also given me a chance to rejig the show a little bit. Hopefully you'll like it the way it is now. And if there's anything which you're missing, keep tuning in, because you may find some of the old things that we used to do coming back, because if you enjoyed them, I probably enjoyed them as well. Okay, in today's show then, we've got a story about the mystery of Eric and George, Britain's first two robots. Then we have a report from the Thought Bubble Festival, which happened last week, and is seen by many independent comic creators as the number one comic festival of the year. And finally, we have a review of the comic book The Darkest King, which is not just a review. There's some hardcore acting in that from yours truly, so something to listen out for. Okay, without further ado, let's get on with it. Everybody knows where the future of robotics is going. It's a done deal. Robots get made smarter. We make a load of sex bots. The sex bots become sentient and wipe out the human race in the most efficient and erotic manner possible. Robot kind on the rise, and mankind dies out with a squelch and feelings of regret. Before humanity gets rogered into oblivion by a bunch of oversexed smartphones, let's take a look at the mystery of Britain's first robots, Eric and George. The year is 1928, and the members of Britain's Society of Model Engineers are preparing for an exhibition of their ingenuity and creativity. The event is due to be opened by the Duke of York, and as a side note, the Duke of York would later become King George VI and invent the genre of music known as stutter rap. With a royal guest of honour, it looked as if the exhibition of model engineers was going to be a swell affair, until word reached the secretary for the exhibition, a Captain William Richards, that the Duke of York had unexpectedly cancelled. Captain Richards was not best pleased with this situation, and realised that he needed to find someone special to open the exhibition. Unfortunately for Captain Richards, it would be 70 years until terrible reality TV shows would make every man and his scabby dancing dog a celebrity. So he was hard-pressed, as you can imagine, to find anybody suitable. It was at this point that Captain Richards got together with the aircraft engineer, Alan Reffel, and decided to build a great big ruddy robot to do the job for them. And so after about 5 or 6 months and a lot of tinkering about, Eric the robot was born. At the opening of the Model Engineers exhibition, Britain's first robot rose from his chair, bowed, and gave a 4-minute talk. Gobs were most certainly smacked, and a shiny metal star was born. Eric had arrived. So how did Eric work? Eric's exterior was made of aluminium and looked very much like a knight in shining armour. His eyes glowed white with red pupils, and when he spoke, blue sparks flickered within his mouth. On his chest there was a metal shield, and on that shield was a logo saying R.U.R. R.U.R. was a nice nod to the 1920 novel, also called R.U.R., by Czech writer Karol Čapek. Within the book, R.U.R. stood for Rozum's Universal Robots, the factory that creates the roboti within the story. Čapek's book, R.U.R., introduced the term robot as applying to artificial automata. The word robot comes from the Slavic word robota, meaning forced labourer. Eric was fixed to a large box that held a motor. He moved through the use of electromagnets and pulleys. It was claimed at the time by Captain Richards that a special mechanism allowed Eric to hear and answer questions. It's more likely that a remote wireless system was used and a hidden operator was answering for Eric. So what happened to Eric? After his first appearance, Eric became an overnight success and soon travelled the world wowing onlookers with his shiny metal threads and witty robotic put-downs. The New York press heralded him as the perfect man, and who can argue with them? Chicks dig a guy who has red eyes and spits lightning. And then, seemingly at the height of his fame, this mechanical marvel disappeared. What became of Eric is not really fully known. There is evidence that Alan Reffel began touring with Eric on his own. Whatever truly happened is unclear, and Eric has never been seen again. Richards commissioned a second robot called George, and began touring all over again, this time with his son helping him. George was a far more lifelike robot than his predecessor Eric. His head was moulded to give it a more human appearance. Like Eric, George became an instant hit, and toured extensively through Europe, and even travelled as far as Australia. The outbreak of World War II ended George's travels, as he and Richards returned home. In an attempt to keep George safe during the war, he was buried in a coffin-like box beneath a garage in Surrey, in the hope they could be covered after the war had ended. Sadly, during one fateful German bombing raid, the garage took a direct hit, and it seemed that George was destroyed. Captain Richards died on Christmas Day 1948, taking many of the secrets of these two groundbreaking robots to his grave. George's story had not ended, though. In a bizarre turn of events, a robot looking remarkably like George turned up in 1952, appearing with the then up-and-coming British actress Diana Dawes. This robot was called Robert, and had apparently been invented by Dawes' first husband, Dennis Hamilton, from bits and pieces he found in his basement. Despite Dennis Hamilton's claims, it's obvious from photographs that he had somehow got his hands onto the long-thought destroyed George, and simply renamed him. To say that Dennis Hamilton was a bit of a git would be an understatement. He was a nasty piece of work, who stole money from and beat his glamorous young wife. Passing George as his own invention would not have been a big deal for this odious little turd of a man. Hamilton eventually did meet with members of the Richards family on a couple of occasions, and according to one account, physically threatened and assaulted one of the late Captain Richards' grandsons. As with Eric, George then seemingly disappeared and has not yet been seen again. The story of early British robots does, however, have a somewhat happy ending. In 2016, a Kickstarter campaign by the Science Museum successfully funded a plan to rebuild Eric, using some original plans that had been discovered. The new Eric the Robot was built by artist and robot maker Giles Walker. Eric the Robot, Mark II, now lives at the Science Museum and will begin once again travelling the world in 2017 as part of the Science Museum's Travelling Robot exhibition. Hello, Lucy. Are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
Hello, good to see you. You've been at Thought Bubble today. Tell us all's about it.
So, Thought Bubble is apparently the biggest comic art festival in Britain as we speak. It was the 11th Leeds Comic Art Festival this year, and it's like 2 days now. So originally, when we went along, me and you, ages ago, it was only like a one-day event, and it was held in Savile Hall.
Named after Sir James Savile, yeah.
That was before everybody knew that he was a cheeky little scamp. By that, I mean, old pervert. So, but now it's over 2 days, and in fact, there's other stuff that's happening in Leeds over the week, so it's massive. And it was over 5 different venues in Leeds, so yeah, there were thousands of people there. It was really, really interesting, actually, because I'm not that big a comic book fan. I mean, you, Stephen, you're a geek, aren't you? You're a massive geek. When I compare myself with you, I'm a rock star compared to you. But even I got my geeky side on. Don't make that face like you're wondering. We all know. But I can see why people geeked out, really, because there was loads of stuff there. It was quite overwhelming. You've got so much to look at and so many different artists there and people selling cool stuff. But yeah, it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And I got some quite interesting little zines to read. So, do you want me to tell you about them?
First of all, before you tell us about your interesting little zines, first of all, I'm a geeky rock star. You can be the two things. Let's get that right before we go any further. I'm like the Iggy Pop of comic books. Anyway, tell me about the general. What were the things you saw there? And then we can get on to the things you purchased and all that.
So we saw a lot of loads and loads of different artists, lots of different styles of comic book art, a lot of independent artists, a lot of really famous, well-established artists and well-established names. But there was a lot of stuff that I'd never heard of before. That doesn't say much. But I really enjoyed it. Obviously, lots of people in cosplay outfits walking around like there were friggin' 10 men. Lots of Harley Quinns. Lots of...
It's not a con without a few chubby Harley Quinns, is it, though?
Also, quite a few chubby Han Solos as well. Definitely not Solo. There was an 8-pack, I reckon.
Flan Solo.
But it was actually not sponsored, but it had an area sponsored by the Autism Service, because I think there was a lot of autistic people there. Lots of people on the spectrum, which I think is nice, because I think comic books bring people together, really, and maybe a lot of people feel, I don't know, maybe safe in that world. And it was just nice to see people that normally would get, seven bells of shit kicked out of them in Leeds if they were wearing a furry tail, being allowed to wear a furry tail and walking around and, being quite happy doing that. So, no, there's something nice. All the freaks and geeks came out today and nobody got their teeth smashed in. So, in Leeds, that's been a good day, I reckon. That's a good weekend.
It is, isn't it? As far as furries go, though, I think most people are of the same opinion that it's great that you're helping people, maybe autistic, but furries are a breed apart and they possibly, they deserve maybe a little bit of a kick in, but in a friendly way.
Yeah, I have to say, I didn't see many furries. I saw lots of Deadpools. That's, it's almost becoming a cliche that, ooh, Deadpool, yeah, we get it. But just because you wear the outfit don't make you funny. Lots of Spider-Men. And what else was the one that I saw a lot of? Just loads of Star Warsy stuff. Although I saw somebody, quite a large girl, and hey, good on her, dressed up as I'm not a Star Wars fan at all. What's the newest film? The ball that runs around?
BB-8.
That, and I thought, actually, talk about dressing for your shape. You did a good job. You did. She looked really nice. That was the shape that she was, so she looked cute.
Right, should we move on from turning this slowly into the body shaming podcast that I think it's becoming? So,
bless them all. They had a lovely day. Had a lovely day out.
They'll sleep well tonight.
Sleep well tonight.
Would I have enjoyed it, do you think, if I could have made it?
You would have chuffing loved it. Yeah, it was really good. There were a lot of people to talk to, because obviously we've done cons before, obviously nothing of the size that it was today, but because I know what it's like to be on the other side of that table, selling your wares, I made sure that I would look at the people behind the table and I'd say hello to them and I'd chat to them, and I think they're just happy if, like, a couple of people that I bought stuff off, when I passed them the money, they looked like I'd made their year. So I think there's a lot of people that were there that probably might not have sold that much because maybe they were a bit shy, or there was so much to spend, so much to spend your money on, that I think there was a lot of people maybe that weren't getting as good sales. But yeah, it was wonderful for a comic book fan. You had so much at your fingertips to buy, and you could spend a lot of money there easily. But But yeah, it was good. I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't do, there was loads of talks that you could go to, lots of competitions that you could take part in. And I didn't do any of that. I just looked around and bought some stuff. But yeah, I thought it was brilliant, really. And the fact it's going on tomorrow as well, I think it's really good for Leeds.
So what were the things that caught your inquisitive eye?
So, first of all, I bought a book called Portraits of Violence, which is an illustrated history of radical thinking. Now, I mean, it's not a laugh a minute. It is using the kind of theories of people like Noam Chomsky and Susan Sontag. It's basically their theories on like violence and suffering and things, but illustrated. So it's great. It's really, really good. I love stuff like that. I love when graphic novels mix with other areas of like academia or thought like that. I think it's a great way of getting across some very tricky subject matter in a visual sense. So yeah, I bought that. I thought that was ace. I also bought a comic book by it's called Carrion Rufus, and it was sold to me by the writer and the artist, who was called Ben Hennessy. He was a lovely young Irishman. He caught my eye. And he sold it as a mixture between Turner and Hooch and The Walking Dead. And I was like, you had me at Turner and Hooch. Here's £3. So,
what was his crack like?
What, his crack? It was grey crack. I wished I could see more of his crack. But fortunately, he just signed my comic book. And the police told me to move on.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he was a lovely young man and obviously very talented as well with a pen. So, and then I bought a book of, I bought one called Pope Francis Goes to the Dentist, because I love the Pope. I love teeth.
Dentistry.
I love dentistry. And I met the guy that drew it as well, called Paul B. Rainey.
Legend.
Yeah, such a lovely bloke, really, really nice. And my friend who I was with didn't like realise it was him. And then when she looked at his name, she suddenly went, "Oh, you're Paul B. Rainey. I love your stuff. I've got like your collection of all of your things together." And she went, "Oh, sorry, I'm fangirling." And he was like, "No, please, fangirl." He said, "Nobody has." So I think he was really pleased that somebody had recognised who he was. And yeah, I like the style of his comics. It's funny and kind of quite interesting, a little bit, I don't know, maybe, well, controversial because it's the Pope, but who cares? Although saying that, you know the newest Pope that we have?
Yeah.
He seems dead nice, doesn't he? I quite like him.
I think as popes go, old Ratzinger, there was something menacing about him. I don't think he ever got away from the Nazi links, but yeah.
No. But the new one, he's quite cool, I think. I quite like him. I think when he was with Donald Trump and his family, he was giving a bit of side eye to Trump, and I thought, hey, Pope, I like you.
If we get him on the show, I'll put the feelers out, see if we can get him.
Can you see if you can get him on the show?
Yeah.
I'll have a chat. Latin and an Italian, and we'll have a bit of a chat. So I bought that, and then, what else did I get? Oh, and then I bought, so I love a print, as you well know, Steve. You probably don't know that. But, so I bought these really awesome, quite graphic, striking images. One is kind of like a Nefertiti-style one. Have you got a joke about Nefertiti? Titties?
Titties? Nefertitties?
And then one that looks like a cyclops. And that is by, if I've got the little card, that is by Stish Illustration. I don't know whether she's Leeds-based or, but her Instagram is @Stish_illustrate. And yeah, just really lovely, cool prints. And she was telling me how she did it on this, like, she's got a Victorian print press and she does them on there, and how sometimes it doesn't every 5 or 10 that she does, one kind of messes up. So she said it's a bit of trial and error.
Is that when the child has to crawl under it while it's moving, gets caught, and it maybe takes a hand off?
Yeah, I asked if I could have one of those. You know, the ones covered in blood. Yeah.
I was just going to say, though, it's ironic that you got those prints, because whenever I see Nefertiti's, I always grab hold of me one-eyed monster. Has the computer froze?
No.
Sorry, I felt that I needed to put a pun in there of sorts. It wasn't needed.
And then I started chatting to a guy who runs the Swansea Comic and Gaming Convention called Ricky Webber. And we were talking about, he was saying how he's kind of, it's grown over the last couple of years into being quite a big deal. I think he said when the second year that they did it, it got bigger, they'd got more, they'd got like 1,000 people or something coming to it. So they did it in an abandoned supermarket and had all the people in there, and he said it went really well. But yeah, he was lovely, and he was saying, oh, you know, maybe you should come to the Swansea Comic and Gaming Convention. So if anybody's interested, www.scgc.org.uk and have a look at when that's on. But yeah, that was really interesting.
What's his name again? Sorry, what was that? The man's name again?
Is it Ricky Webber?
Doesn't that sound like the best friend you should have had at primary school?
Yeah, it does. Do you know what? He was a really friendly guy, really friendly. And I thought, ooh. And then he told me that there were these two other Welsh guys that were at the convention as well that came to it and said how great it was. Then I went, maybe about 10 minutes later, I went to another stall and there were these two Welsh guys there. So I went, oh, I've just been talking to Ricky. And they went, who's Ricky? And I went, Ricky from Swansea, Comic and Gaming Convention. They went, oh, we're North Wales. And there was total beef there. And I thought, oh, hello.
Oh, well, I don't know the guys who arranged the North East Wales one, which is held at Wrexham. But one of my old chums I was at uni with is chums with them. And it's a big deal. I think they probably want to be the Welsh con, because they get loads of famous people. They get Robson and Jerome, to go there. When I went there last time, there was loads of famous folk there. So maybe there is some beef.
Maybe. Well, I picked up on it. And so they went, who's Ricky? And I went, he's the guy that says that you two are tossers. So I hope that something happens. and then there were people there. My friend was really geeking out about Brian K. Vaughan, who had a huge queue of people waiting for him to sign their stuff. And then he did a talk as well. So he's from
Saga,
the writer of Saga and Ex Machina, Paper Girls, Runaways, Pride of Baghdad, and there were lots of other really well-known guests there as well. There was Joelle Jones, Sarah Picelli, Frank Quitely, Nick Derrington, Marley Zarcone, Gerard Way. Gerard Way is the frontman.
Musician.
It used to be the frontman of My Chemical Romance, yeah.
Yeah, just comics.
Also,
yeah.
He's the curator of DC comic stuff. So, yeah, he was there. I think he would have had a massive queue. But, yeah, it was, you know, I'm really pleased that I went. It was a bit steep. It was, well, I don't mean as in hills. Quite. It was 18 quid on the door, 17 quid if you booked it online. Now, that's, you're not getting anything for that. You're not getting, like, oh, you get to choose a book. Or, oh, here's a cup of lukewarm tea. You get nothing for that.
Or a goodie bag.
No goodie bags. All you get is a frigging wristband. And you get to go into the 5 areas. But then you have to spend your money on stuff. So I know that's probably covering the costs of, the venue and things. But actually, they're raking in. I think that's a bit too expensive, to be honest. I think a tenner, there was thousands of people there today. A tenner would have been all right. I think 18 quid leads, you robbing bastards.
Yeah. I've noticed that you've kept your wristband on. Is that because you want people, after, when you go back to work, to see it and then ask if you've been at a festival and you're going to pretend it was a music festival?
I've already bicked on it, Glastonbury. I've got a pen out and written it on, and then I'm going to tell some stories about me and Liam Gallagher.
Yeah.
So it's no, I've still got it on because I haven't taken it off yet, Stephen. But I shall be taking it off before I go back to work, because there's one thing that I don't like, and that is kids trying to start up a conversation with me.
Yeah.
I don't want any kids to know anything about my life, or even to try to talk to me. So I should be taking it off and turning myself back into the blank canvas of a bitch that I normally am.
I'm heartened to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, nice. Well, thank you very much for your report.
Thanks.
Are you willing to, for the next show, to do us a few reviews of those comic books you picked up?
No.
You bitch.
Go on then.
Yay!
Well, I didn't mention actually, and I need to, he was such a nice guy. So there's another guy, well, it's not comic book, but he does these really lovely, like, illustrations. I think actually he did have, like, a comic book, and it was called 1 Year Wiser, 365 Illustrated Meditations. And it was by I think he's American, but if he's Canadian, same thing in it.
Yeah.
Mike Medegalia.com. And he does these really lovely prints of, like, quotes from, so there was a quote from Bell Hooks, Emily Dickinson, not just literary, there were some, like, philosophical quotes as well. But they're just really, they're printed on recycled paper, biodegradable plastic wrap.
He's a hippie, obviously.
Yeah, a little bit.
I thought bell hooks were like genital piercings.
No, Stephen. Oh. So, bell hooks? Bell hooks was, I don't think she's still alive. No, I don't think she will be. She might be. She doesn't capitalise a name, so it's under, it's lowercase for all of her name, because she was reclaiming her slave name back. And she's a brilliant African-American writer, or was. I think she must be dead by now. I was just about to say, I hope so.
You're bigging her up, and then now you're wishing her dead. You know what?
And I've read quite a lot of her stuff when I was at uni, and I really like Bell Hooks. So, but yeah, and I was really surprised actually to see some Bell Hooks stuff. I even mentioned it to him. So I think probably because he was American, he had some stuff in there. But yeah, he was such a nice bloke, really lovely, and was chatting to me about being an English teacher and stuff. And yeah, he was lovely. So there were, do you know what? There were so many nice people there today. There was a lot of people that didn't know manners and, like, pushed past you in some sort of shitty Minecraft costume. A few times, I really wanted to lay the nut on a few people.
That's kids, isn't it? Fucking kids.
But for the most part, I had a nice time. So yeah, I would definitely go back again next year, because it was ace.
Brilliant. And the last question is, it's my birthday soon. Did you pick me up something a little bit special which you've not told me about?
Let's say that I did.
You have then?
Maybe you should tell me what you'd like, and then maybe I've got it, or maybe I'll get what you told me that you wanted.
Well, I did tell you what I wanted, but you didn't get it, did you?
Was it? Because I asked you to actually have a look and see who was there, but you didn't do it.
I just chose a random name.
Random, so all day, for 5 hours, I went to look for this comic book, and it didn't fucking exist.
That was my plan, to get you walking round by just, you know, telling you something that might, you know, that...
Well, I think I even asked a couple of people as well. Yeah, you don't get anything. Nothing for you.
Nothing! Right, thank you very much. And I mean, I look forward to hearing your reviews of those comics you picked up. Thank you very much, Lucy, and I'm glad to see that you enjoyed yourself.
Finally, we're going to talk about the comic book The Darkest King. It was released, the first issue, in February 2017, and I was going to do a review of it a long time ago, but unfortunately, as I mentioned at the start of the show, having a new baby got in the way of that. So, to make it up to the creators of it for taking so long to finally get round to reviewing it, I decided I'd do something a little bit special. So rather than me just describe the storyline and what's going on in the comic book, I've decided to create my own gumshoe film noir style character to explain the backstory to The Darkest King. So it's a little bit different, but we'll see what you make of it. There is some quality acting by me in this, if I do say so myself.
Come in, you know. Don't be a stranger. Put up a chair. I guess you're here to talk about The Darkest King. That picture book has got a lot of people interested, if you know what I mean. And I'm more than happy to fill you in on any little bits of detail that you need. So, have you ever been to Coldwood before? No? Well, maybe for your health, it might be better if you keep things that way. You ever into mythology at school? I used to love it. Apollo, Zeus, all the gods. You ever heard of Janus? That's the god of doorways, the two-faced god. But she can go two different ways through a door. It makes sense, doesn't it? Well, the story is very much about that. Two brothers, the King brothers, Kurt and Victor. They were pretty close as they were growing up. I hear they used to spend their days pretending to be heroes, trying to save the city. Which incidentally is a theme that seems to have continued into their adult life. So all I know about their childhood is that they had the distinct misfortune of being born with a father who was too slow to show affection, and all too fast to start throwing fists. Yeah, them and their mum, particularly Kurt, they suffered in his hands. And maybe that's why him and Victor, who don't think copped it quite so bad from the old man, maybe that's why they went in such different directions. Kurt, the older brother, he was a cop. I guess he didn't get any satisfaction from the type of justice that he was getting when he was waving his badge around. So he trades it in for his fists and firing smoking hot lead at every drug dealer or hoodlum that he sees. Yeah, he's quite the vigilante. He's quite lucky, though. It seems the police, like, don't mind turning a blind eye to some of his nocturnal activities. It's gonna get him in trouble, though, but I'll tell you more about that. And then you got Victor, the younger brother. Yeah, you must have heard of Victor King, the wealthy savior of the world, one of the richest guys you will ever meet. Yeah, he's on magazine covers, interviews on the television. Yeah, he's quite the man. Word on the street is, though, he ain't so squeaky clean. The name Victor King and corruption, they're being heard far too frequently for his liking at the moment. Anyway, the real story happening here is Kurt. He's been sticking his nose into the business of Mr. X. He is the masked kingpin of crime in Coldwood. Any racket going on, anyone pushing or peddling something, he's getting a cut of that, or he's directly behind it. Well, Kurt wants to arrange a face-to-face with him. But he's not phoning him up and calling him. He's kicking the living shit out of his henchmen. He's stopping his deals. He is killing and stealing everything that means a damn to Mr. X. And he's getting noticed. I just hope that Kurt's ready for the kind of shitstorm that's coming his way. But here's the big question. The almighty, great Victor King, the wealthy savior of the world. What's his relationship to Mr. X? Is he gonna help his brother? I just don't know. And that's what's got people thinking. There's been a lot of dark talk in Coldwood. So, as I said, if you ain't been there, I suggest you stick to reading about it in your comic book. That might be far safer for you in the long run. And I've only got your best intentions at heart. Yeah. Anything else you need to know, feel free to call back any time. Now get out of my office. I'm sick of your face already.
Now, I don't know if they ever plan on introducing a podcast category at the Oscars, but if they ever do, I'd ruddy well better be in contention after that performance, ladies and gentlemen. And this is going to blow your mind. I've never had an acting lesson in my life. Yes. How did I do it? I don't know. Natural skills. Anyway, less about my amazing performance. Let's talk about The Darkest King. So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Tony Scott Astley is the writer and Paul Anderson is the artist. If you like gritty comics to do with crime, anti-heroes, gumshoes, murder, nefarious, masked kingpins of crime, then you're going to like The Darkest King. It's well worth a look at. Now, talking about the artwork, I found it really interesting. It seemed to me like it was very much a mixed media piece, in that there are some scenes which are clearly hand-drawn. Then there are others where it looks like they've used photographs in the background that have had some processes done to them. And it makes for a really interesting look to it. I really enjoyed some of the panel layouts. They had a real cinematic feel to them. They were using some very interesting, camera angles. You know what I mean? I know it's a comic book. The angles we were looking at the characters from certainly had a film quality to it. I enjoyed it. Now, other things which you will like if you're a bloke, there's plenty of boobs in it, you know, always got time for that. And one of the things which I really enjoyed about it is it sets up so well for the next comic, because you are left wondering what people are going to do after this first one, where they stand on the situations that you're hearing about, and you don't know who's on whose side. And so it's a really nice first comic, because it introduces some of these main players. Then it starts hinting at the bigger picture. There's this mysterious kingpin of crime, which I mentioned in the little dramatic piece I did. You don't see him, you only heard him mentioned. And I like that. Because if you know good horror films, you don't show your monster, you know, until maybe right at the end of the second act or beginning of the third act. You don't fully see them. You will feel their influence. You'll see the effects of them. I've not seen the second issue yet, but just the talking of this Mr. X guy, it's exciting. It draws you in. It's enthralling. It's an enigma which you want to see answered, as is the relationship between Kurt and Victor. We knew they were great friends when they were little boys, but, you know, that they saw themselves as a hero and a sidekick when they were playing. Where are they now? Because their relationship seems very, very different. So, that is The Darkest King. You can get that from WPComicsLimited.com. The company WP Comics Limited is from Cardiff, Wales. And I would heartily suggest having a look at it if you think it sounds like the kind of thing that you'd be into. And I don't see any reason why not. So, that brings us to the end of this show. Our first one back after that hiatus. I hope you enjoyed it. A little bit different from what we've done before. If you want to get in contact with us, please contact us at Empire Geek. I'd be happy to hear your thoughts and suggestions, and I'll catch you next time on Empire Geek.
That was ghastly.